but comments, because if we actually want to submit those in this cycle, they would need to go in by Thursday. And whether we do or not, we can decide that, but we at least need to make a decision. Yeah, right. And I'm not pushing one way or the other, but the comment period ends Thursday, right? And then the second issue, if there's any time, we could start looking at the who is studies, but if we have to put that off to the next meeting, that's not really a big issue. I think the budget comments, we at least need to make a decision.
Byron, excuse me, I think we're about to resume. I think we'll call the meeting back to order. Because of the delay, Kurt wanted to be excused and come back at 3 o'clock, which may conflict with Greg Rattray.
Well, actually, Kevin is supposed to be here from 3 to 3:30, and Greg from 3:30 to 4, but I've just pinged. Are you? Oh, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
All right, flip-flop. Okay. So maybe. Do you think we might actually be able to get him here sooner than 3?
The 2:30 item, which is pretty close to where we are, is Craig, you and Francisco is.
Yeah, so Francisco's obviously not here, and you didn't really as a group talk about this morning. I wasn't quite sure what you wanted to cover today, since we presented the processes back in May, and there's a public comment period now open on those two procedures. You raised a number of issues that we either have incorporated into the draft that was posted or are still being considered. So I'm not quite sure what you actually wanted to cover today with regard to this. And I'm not trying to make your life difficult.
Oh, that's all right.
But Kevin is on his way, so we may actually get the budget discussion sooner rather than later, if that works for you.
Okay. Well, I think we may be at somewhat an impasse here. The budget comments due Thursday, there's no longer a quorum, so it's going to have to be done by email anyway.
One of the things I can do when Kevin's here, if you want, David, is I could just quickly go through our draft comments that we haven't approved, and at least those that are here could, afterwards, decide whether they want to submit them in writing or we just give them to them orally.
Fine. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll wait till Kevin gets here and give them. That way we can. We don't need Kevin to do a review of the budget, do we?
Well, I imagine he probably intended to make some type of short presentation, but if that's not the way the group wants to go and you just want to launch into questions and comments, I'm sure that's just as well.
Well, I would prefer that, but I've gone through it in detail, so I don't want to speak for other people.
Right. Are there folks in the room that would want Kevin to make a short presentation, or would you prefer to just open the floor for questions and comments? Doing your job, David, sorry.
I think questions and comments, unless anyone.
Okay. Well, he said he was on his way, so he should walk in the door any moment.
There's one item that we didn't cover in the morning agenda. It's probably not anything we're going to have much discussion on, if any, but that's the joint SOAC working group on new GTLD applicant support. We could probably wrap that up while we're waiting here and maybe wrap it up in about 5 seconds. I don't know.
That was the last item on the morning agenda. what is the issue?
Well, that's the joint working group that has been formed to see if there's some way to help domain name new TLD applicants that may be financially constrained in some way. So I don't know that we have anybody on that group, but they did publish some ideas for comment, and I don't have them in front of me right here, but they're suggesting several different types of support, and don't know what'll come out of that. Some of it is possible financial support. There's technical support. There's a few other things that they're looking at. I mean, they're considering some good ideas. How they will come to fruition, we don't know. But remember, the board passed a resolution to form a group that would look at this issue because of the repeated requests from the community that, hey, there's some groups out there that would like to do TLDs, but they're not as financially able to do that. And one of the things that I thought the group, one point I saw they made that I thought was healthy was that they're not looking at recommending 100% support, but rather keeping at least 50-50 so there's some viability in the organization to be able to continue. We don't necessarily, it's not an area that we're really involved in directly, but there are GNSO members that are involved in it.
Is there a budget for this, or is it still
no.
in the...
So there, another thing they're doing is kind of looking at possible sources of funding from outside the ICANN community, you know, foundations and so forth, something like that. Again, I'm not on the group. I do see some of their stuff. I'm on their list, but I don't try to keep track of it.
David. I was just curious on that, Chuck. I haven't read that much about that. Were they thinking of the funding for that perhaps coming from the applicant fees that would – no?
No, they did talk a little bit about the possibility of reduced fees. So I guess if that was the approach, and I don't know how many of them really support that, if that happened, that could effectively amount to what you're talking about, but they weren't necessarily advocating that, at least as I understood it. I think before anything substantial comes of that, there would be opportunity for comment once any specific recommendations are put forward. So I don't know that we need to spend a lot of time on it unless people have questions.
While we wait, one thing we might turn our attention to is the joint registrar meeting that's coming up at 4 o'clock. The question of the process for election of the council chair, vice chair, and then separately board seat number 13. These are choices that have to be made by the contracted party house as a whole. And what this means is that the two groups, registries and registrars, each have an equal voice, and the tiebreaker, if there is an otherwise unbreakable failure of agreement, is the nominating committee representative, which makes it rather difficult to have an easy way to run the process. Kevin? Oh, welcome. Are you ready to...
I'm happy. Yes, I'm ready.
Good.
Are you ready for me?
Oh, we are.
Great.
Our schedule has gotten somewhat confused, but this is a good time for you to be here.
Great, thank you. And I walked into 312, and you all looked very different over there. So, I actually do have a 5 or 10 slide, although with this group it's probably not absolutely necessary. So, do you want to present it or?
Well, we were just talking about that, and I think the consensus was that we'd probably rather go right to the questions, that's agreeable to you.
That sounds great. Can I do sort of some obligatory housekeeping?
Please, yes. Go ahead.
If I could. All right, good. That'll give you a couple minutes to fine-tune your questions there. Great. Thank you very much. Is this being recorded, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. So my name is Kevin Wilson. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for ICANN, and I'm excited and pleased to present the proposed ICANN operating plan and budget. I'll have introductory remarks, very, very brief, so that you can ask questions, and I'll weave some of my other points in if it's necessary or if we miss them at the end. I think the most important point is the process. It would be irresponsible of me to present the budget without having the first point being the process, that there's been 6 months of the strategic plan update, which ultimately culminated in I call it the one-pager simplified 4 focus areas strategic plan. From that, we took that and prepared the framework for the operating plan, which you all saw in Nairobi and before. And we've had many community calls. I think there's 70 pages of online comments, numerous notes that I had on your calls and others, and 2 board briefings. And there was also a GNSO resolution. That was the first time in my experience to have an actual GNSO resolution regarding the budget. And so we've synthesized that. There's an Appendix C of the budget, which the Finance Committee directed us to, in addition to soliciting feedback and encouraging feedback, the point being that we would want to also provide response to the feedback. So in the Exhibit C, it's outlined on exactly how we handled each of the comments, whether we agreed and accepted that and synthesized and added it to the budget, or whether we said no and explained why, or whether it was some combination of maybe. So we tried really hard to honor that driver of the Finance Committee. I think you have the big picture of the overall budget that it drives down to. The Finance Committee directed us to still have contribution to the reserve, even though the revenue is stable and only has a 3% growth estimated for this year. The operating expenses needed to be managed and to be fiscally responsible and to continue to have the driver down to add to at least $2 million to the reserve fund. That being said, this is the first year, and we can talk about it and answer questions if you like, but this is the first year we've really pushed up against that in many years, meaning the operating expenses pushing up against the revenue line item. So to be responsible, every time there was something added, we had to ask the question, okay, where are we going to take it from? And so there was a lot of ICANN has grown up a lot, I guess I'd put it that way. So as many of your organizations go through normal budget processes and prioritization, ICANN also is doing that process more and more so. And so I'm pleased, although it's tough as a CFO to be the scorekeeper in that kind of environment, it's a really important process that we do that and prioritize it and make sure that we're spending money efficiently, budgeting efficiently. The last thing I wanted to point out is there's a proposal in the in the budget document, and we've talked about it with the Finance Committee. I think it'll probably come out of the budget document in some sort of paper, of changing the overall planning process. So right now it's a 6-month strat plan update, 6-month operating plan and budget. that for the year, and then now the thought being let's shorten the strategic plan update process and have maybe a couple, 4 months of time where we're updating the strategic plan each year, but spend much more time doing the fine, the big gross dials of the budget and resource allocation, and push that out to the community more so that it, the standard story is it's easy to come up with a list of activities and you always want to say yes, 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 yes. But when you put numbers to them and amounts to them, or euros or dollars to them, then the more important discussion comes up on priorities. Where are we prioritizing our spending and how are we allocating that? In addition to that, the proposal is, the suggestion is to have much more formalized SO and AC involvement, so that they would plug in, and the Finance Committee internally is talking maybe in the September-October timeframe we would have some sort of formal discussion or a kickoff discussion with the SO and AC chairs, and that, so that by Cartagena there would be more of a robust discussion on that big dial adjustment, and then obviously still have the ability to do online comments and synthesize those comments. The other point that I want to emphasize, there's still some confusion on the new GTLD budget, the separate budget, and hopefully that's clear with this group. So in the budget document, there's a Section 7 which describes it as a separate budget. And then, as you no doubt know, there's also a document that's posted for community comment called the Separate New GTLD Budget, which describes briefly what's in the actual budget, the development costs. I think it's $8 million for this fiscal year to complete the implementation of the GNSO policy to get the GTLDs ready, work through the final overarching issues. But then the separate budget is more carefully described as deployment and application processing. So we had deployment of $2.6 million, and those are items that essentially have long lead times and long higher risks, software development, real estate, key hires, things like that, that we felt that if we didn't get that approval in advance, there's a jeopardy that we would have further delays even after the applicant guidebook is approved. So the plan is at some point when we think we're ready to go, T-minus some period of time, we'd get request approval for that, and then, like we've talked about in the past, there would also be a separate budget for all the application fees, and then it obviously would be a very, it would have the revenue assumptions in there as well as the application fees and the final costs in order to launch, and that would still be proposed about 90 days before the launch. So that's described there. Those are the two key areas to talk about that. And then, as you know, the board will submit the final budget for the board this Friday for voting. Okay, so just discuss that through. So that kind of finishes my prepared remarks. I'm ready to take questions and comments.
Chuck, go ahead.
Sure. First, let me respond to the suggestion with regard to shortening the strategic period. A strategic plan from 6 months to three or whatever. Actually, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think what we've discovered is that the strategic plan is evolving. It doesn't change drastically because it's a three-year plan and so forth. I would think that would work, and I think it complements where you were going with regard to the operating plan and budget, where more detailed time is needed. I think that fits very nicely. And in particular, in talking to a couple of the board finance committee members, have the idea that what would be really helpful for the GNSO would be to actually treat it as an operating division within the budget, or at least in some iteration of the budget. You do different pictures of it. So where we had our own chart of accounts would really help the GNSO be able to see where we're going in terms of funds and so forth. And I think that added time, say it's 9 months, would allow an early period there to really do that. So that's something that brand new that came to me after a discussion with a couple of finance committee members, and sounds like it could really be helpful going forward. So I definitely support that shortening of the strategic plan part of the year and lengthening the operating plan and budget.
Good. Could I just respond quickly to that?
Mm-hmm.
So the we had a slide for the finance committee with a double arrow, you know, range of what's the role of the SOAC chairs, for example. So right now you're at I put it on the left. Steve Crocker said maybe he should be on the left. I'm not sure what that exactly meant, but but I have right now it's on the left, which means you're a community member and you get to post online and we'll synthesize your comments, and your name might be Chuck or it might be Cheryl, or you know, it's just another representation, right? That's sort of the one end. The other end of the continuum is you're now a department head with responsibility for spend and variances and analyses and all that. And I don't think we're, at least this year, I think that's an interesting discussion, but I think the thought is to move it pretty significantly over there. So I think the idea of actually working on chart of accounts is an interesting one.
Yeah, I think it is too. And I'm not saying we need to get all the way to the right either. We're not exactly like department heads within ICANN. At the same time, it'd be very useful information for us to be able to see that from a GNSO perspective. You know, I've asked some questions, you know, who is studies, some other stuff, and you guys have been great about responding. And with that kind of approach, that would make it a lot easier to analyze the budget relative to especially GNSO issues, which obviously we have a concern about. I'm going to go ahead with some of the draft comments, and Kevin, I'll tell you that these haven't been approved by the stakeholder group yet. Don't know that we'll get them improved in time to submit them in writing. I think they're probably relatively consistent with other members, and they've had it for a while, and I haven't heard any reaction, but let me share a few things. With regard to the question, are there specific deliverables or commitments that require more clarity, one of the questions that was asked for feedback on. The response is that, you know, there are quite a few projects that really need a more detailed breakdown to really answer that question. They're too high a level, and again, I think you know me well enough, I'm not talking about micromanagement, but and there are other cases where the detail's fine. In our comments, if we submit them, or we'll submit them late or something for future iterations, we'll try and identify some of the categories where we think the detail was good and others where it would really be helpful to have more detail.
Okay. Since I rushed through the opening remarks, I wanted to compliment the quality of the comments. So although we've been trying to pat ourselves on the back on the length and the detail of the budget, the comments and the specificity and the detailed analysis has really been helpful for the whole process. So just to emphasize what you were saying, the more specific, you know, to say we need more specificity is great. To say we need more specificity in this specific area, it really helps us focus so we can be more responsive. Yeah.
And if we don't get them in time for this public comment period, we'll get them to you. And I can't tell when the group with the busy schedules right now whether we'll get it done by tomorrow or not. But if we don't, we'll get them to you, the specificity afterwards. Another question was, are the organizational activities prioritized properly? Does one activity or another require more resources? And if so, what other activities should be delayed or eliminated to fund the more important activities? The draft response on that, and by the way, jump in if you disagree with the comment, because we haven't had time to really grapple with this, but or also if you agree. The comment is this: additional increases in the reserve fund should be delayed so that cutbacks in operational expenses can be reduced. New GTLD application fees should be reduced before already spent development funds are put into the reserve fund. Couple thoughts for consideration. And by the way, for those in the room that don't know what's happening there, all the development costs that have been incurred to date, which go back at least 2 years, I think, right, are being incorporated into that $185,000 fee, and then I believe, that those funds then would be moved into the reserve fund.
Yeah, so the current thinking is that $26,000, I think it is, of each application fee would be earmarked for replenishment of the reserve fund.
Yeah, and so that's of each applicant fee, of the $185,000.
Right, of each applicant fee. So if there's only 10 applications in the first round, mm-hmm. then obviously we wouldn't have replenished enough. We'd have to go to the second round. If there's 1,000, then... You know, that yeah. we'd over-replenish.
And is the goal still to have a year's operating expenses?
So I think we even asked a question on that as well. So I think this is the calendar year where ICANN is ready to, it seems to be ready to say, let's have an amount. Let's just not have 1 year of operating, because what's the definition about 1 year of operating? You always have
that
challenge.
That's going to be my next question.
Yeah. So the Finance Committee has discussed this. They really want to set an amount. They don't want to just have an arbitrary amount, which is, you know, FYX is operating expenses. That's just so have a basis for it that's based on, for example, you know, these are the rainy day activities, or these are the black swan type of events that might occur. What is the minimum amount that you really didn't need if you know that catastrophe happened where you really didn't need to access it? Let's identify that, put that in there, earmark it. So the action item that we have, you probably know, the investment policy has a provision that each year it gets reviewed to see if it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have KPMG review that. They did that last year. We're going to have them renew it, and we're asking the specific question, too, about sizing and benchmarking against others and coming up with a more robust answer to that.
Good.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. Another question that you ask is the contribution to the reserve fund enough? Are revenue sources appropriate and set at the right level in the context of existing expectations by the Internet community? The draft response here is the reserve fund's enough until the overall economic conditions improve. Obviously, that's assuming they do, which I think we're all optimistic that they will. And then the second response, it's not appropriate that over 94% of the revenue come from GTLD sources. You've heard that one before. We don't need to belabor that.
Right.
So, and then the next question that you asked in request for comments was, what about the process for developing ICANN's plans? Are they sufficient to accomplish the goals to be accountable and transparent? In Section 3, an alternative schedule for developing the fiscal year plans is proposed. Is this proposal preferred? And I kind of already responded to that, so maybe we can just go beyond that. The comment that we made, by the way, for your information, since you weren't here, in our lunch meeting with the board and some staff members as well that just ended a little bit ago, we complimented the progress that's been made in the budget. I complimented you personally in the past. It still goes that the increased level of detail over the last several years has been great. In general, there's some more areas that will help as we continue to improve it, and we'll identify those.
Right.
And then going beyond the questions, and I don't think that's all the questions you asked, but those are the ones that we responded to so far. I'm not going to necessarily go through all of these. On page 8 of your executive summary, it says that the balancing workload, it says there's a list of bullets in the paragraph titled Balancing Workloads and Setting Priorities. It says this draft fiscal year 11 operating plan and budget proposes the following otherwise important programs and activities not be fully funded in fiscal year 11, and you identify those, which is good, helpful information. Again, reinforcing the comment about the reserve fund, considering that $47 million represents over 71% of the fiscal year 11 budget expenses, it would seem worth considering to not contribute anything in the reserve fund and to use the budgeted $3.1 million in this year's budget for other purposes, maybe not have as many in that list. Something for consideration.
Okay.
Under the fiscal year 11 operating plan, Section 4 of your document. The figure 4.2 on page 15 contains budget expenses for new GTLD and IDN expenses. Are any of the amounts included, any of those amounts, okay, included in the new GTLD budget?
So the short answer is yes. So if you, I'm sure you've read or
yeah, I have.
Read the new GTLD budget.
Yes.
And it describes three types of expenses. So one is development. So the development is included in each year's operating expenses.
Okay, and then that's part of that $26,000 recovered later.
That's right. And then the other two, deployment and application processing, would be separately requested, are not included in this budget request.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That takes care of some of the other supplemental questions. Okay, the next two questions you just answered. You've heard this before, too, this whole issue of even recouping those fees, those development costs, since they've already been expended. Obviously, the goal is to replenish the reserve fund, and we understand that. I think the question is still legitimately raised as to whether or not that should even be done, but we don't need to discuss the philosophy there. But it is an issue, I think. Looking at figure 4.2, there is in fiscal year 11, hopefully a majority of the GNSO improvements will be implemented, because we're wrapping up all the implementation recommendations. In fact, most of them will be in third quarter, will be finished, maybe all of them, in from the GNSO work perspective. There's an increase of $175,000 shown there with regard to that. And, you know, you can't tell. Is that enough? I don't know. I mean, we're talking about a GNSO website improvement, which is going to be major, both in value and probably expense. We're talking about more constituency and stakeholder group support, like the toolkit of services, et cetera. Again, this is one example where there's not sufficient detail to really tell whether that's enough. And I'm sure you guys have a build-up that you got to that. I'm not, again, asking for micro detail, but enough so that we can really tell. You can't tell whether that's an increase of enough. Obviously, all of these things are coming together at the same time in the same fiscal year, which is a big impact, and maybe some of them won't be done in that fiscal year, but hopefully most of them can be. But that's an example of what I think is insufficient detail.
Good. So just to show your point of clarity, you're aware that there's an Appendix A that goes through lots of details on what the activities
yes.
are, not
oh, yeah.
necessarily what
I
the
went
resources
back and
are.
I correlated that, and in some cases the detail was sufficient, and some it wasn't.
Wasn't
I didn't
okay.
think this
okay.
it was there.
In this particular, in 7, constituency support, yeah, we I've heard from a number of two of the other groups today that they felt that there wasn't enough clarity on that, so we'll improve on that.
Yeah. I think I asked this with regard when we met on the framework, but I've never seen an answer, and there's not an answer in there now. Why is the ombudsman budget increasing by 24.6% or $111,000?
Yeah, it's foreign exchange.
Foreign exchange.
I didn't say that. I apologize. I've known that.
Okay.
There's a couple of dollars for cost of living,
okay.
you know, just inflation.
Had never heard the answer.
If you look at the Canadian dollar exchange rate with the U.S. dollar two times, that's the reason why.
A 15.2% increase or $764,000 is projected for the IANA function and technology operations. Again, that may be the right thing to do and a good amount, but I personally didn't think there was enough detail there to tell whether that's good or not.
Okay. I know you had asked that specifically in the framework. And we did provide more.
Yeah,
you have to admit that, but it's not enough.
Didn't meet my expectations, but maybe others feel differently.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Just to quickly rattle off other areas where I thought there was insufficient explanation and cost, and if we don't do it as a stakeholder group in terms of comments, I can send you these comments individually too.
Okay.
But they are your security, stability, the SSR operations, the contractual compliance. In fact, that issue came up, the contractual compliance, this morning. And I actually called the people. That someone was suggesting that there was a decrease in funds for compliance. I went to your document and said, well, it shows a 7.7% increase. But not being able to tell where that's going with regard to compliance, again, it's a little bit hard. Policy development support, global engagement, increasing international participation, travel support for the ICANN community, board support, nominating committee support, travel support for ICANN community and DNS operations were things that I identified that were all areas that I think could benefit from increased detail. And either individually or as a group, I'll give you that list. So
okay, great. Thank you, Chuck. That's helpful.
On the fiscal year,
do you want me to address any of those, by the way, now? Or?
No, I don't think you. I don't think you need to take. If somebody wants, that's okay. I think an awful lot of this, Kevin, probably.
You're fading.
Probably, is information that can be used in the next round.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah. I'm comfortable with flagging the issue for the future. If there's any that you particularly want to discuss, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to make sure that we're really clear on the DNS cert is not in the budget, so I want to.
I'm clear on that.
Yeah.
You guys, you came back with very clear answers. And you also answered the question. It was a little bit different answer when we had our framework discussion because we had heard just a few $100,000, and I have heard since then, I think it was Doug that said there was in the framework there was no funds for DNS cert. So we've heard a couple different answers there, but I'm not really too worried about the difference.
So I just have to make it clear because I've been asked a couple times today, and I've double checked internally. I know that there's a lot of discussion about it, and it came up in the registrar group today, and I said I know I'm a quiet CFO, but I want as loudly as I can. I want to make it as clear as possible that it wasn't in there. It wasn't pulled out because it wasn't in there. There wasn't budget. And as I walked out of the room, Adrian provided this shirt here.
No. And by the way, in the
and draft, I'm not advertising, by the way. So
in the draft budget, I saw that very clearly. So I got the answer that there was nothing in there.
Great, thank you.
I think I'll skip over those things and quickly bring it to a close here. I also identified some areas where I thought there was good detail. So we'll get you those without. So it wasn't as if everything didn't have enough detail. I thought there were some, in my opinion, that did have enough detail. And
great.
Those are listed too. One question regarding the new GTLD program development on page 53. What are the estimated total development costs to be included in the application fee? You told me the amount per application fee, but I'm talking about that total gross figure.
If you is Kurt here, actually? Yeah, Kurt probably has a better number in his head. But the original cost, the original $185,000 paper, the paper that supported the $185,000, I think we had $12.5 million or $13 million, something like that. And that's how we came up with the $26,000 per application that would be replenished. Obviously, we've had a year and a half, 2 years of development costs and delays. It's a narrower amount, but it's over a longer period of time. So the net amount, I'm going to guess it's north of $20 million that would be in development costs.
Thanks. In Appendix A, Section A7, the constituency support, it looked to me like it only covered costs related to registries and registrars, and this group is actually quite satisfied with that, if that's the case. But as a GNSO person, I have to ask the question, where are the costs associated with support for other constituencies and stakeholder groups that are recommended as part of the GNSO improvements?
Yeah, I've heard that comment clearly. I think that's a format issue and just the way we've drafted it, but we need to fix that and address it.
Last of all, in Appendix C, Community Feedback, Table C1, the Fiscal Year 11 Community Support Travel Guidelines, Community Feedback, page 69 has a column titled Responses. But what I found was it simply refers back to sections of the document that didn't contain enough detail as it was, so I found that kind of inadequate. So.
Okay. Thank you for the feedback.
And that's
on
all
that.
I had, David. I don't know if anybody else has anything, and I'm sorry to rush, but I know we have time deadlines.
Okay.
Good. Well, thank you, Kevin. But do you have anything further?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you very much for your contributions, and I wanted to make a plug for Thursday morning after the gala. They love to put me after the gala. The one thing good about that session is that the different community groups really ask a lot of different questions, very, very different than the questions I heard today. So it's sometimes helpful to hear the types of questions and concerns of the other community group members. So I'd encourage you Thursday morning if you'd like to hear the abbreviated version of this and then open it up for questions. So, but anyway, thank you very much for your feedback.
You were welcome. Kurt has rejoined us, and it's just after 3 o'clock, so... Kurt?
So are we talking about new GTLDs? Or what do you... That's what's on the agenda?
Yeah, so gosh, we've talked about them a lot this week, and so I think, you know, why don't we just check to see what questions people have, unless there's some materials that people missed during other presentations, I can go through them, but I think we're all pretty much up to speed, especially with this group more than any other group.
Any questions? Yes, you may.
Yeah, and I'll just say the same answer as I gave last time.
Yeah.
All right, so community value criteria. Still having difficulty with this concept of giving a point for uniqueness when the whole idea of community value criteria is if there is contention. So I'm not understanding the logic of having a point for uniqueness when it can only come into play if there is contention. Does that make sense? Okay. Thank you.
So it's a really good question. There's one case where it clearly might apply, and that is if there's a community applicant versus a non-community applicant, and the community applicant can say, that's my string, and there's, you know, uniqueness associated with that name. I guess you have to think harder if it's two community applicants that are in contention going for the same name, how they could claim complete uniqueness. But I think that could come into play, too, because they could claim to represent the same community. So it's, it's really about, if you're part of a community and that's your string name, you should get it and nobody else should. And if you're in a community and you have a string name, but there's lots of other uses for that string name, then it's a little less certain that you have to have that one. So it's meant to put out at the pinnacle. If you're a community-based, if you're representative of that community and that's your string and there's no doubt about it, well, then nobody else should get it, and that's it. If you're a member of a community and that's your string, but there are other uses of the string, then it's less certain. If the nexus between you and that name is even less, then it becomes less certain. So that's what it's meant to address.
So I might counter that with, if there's a no doubt about it situation, you won't be in contention. If there's a no doubt about it situation, you won't be in contention, I would say.
Oh, yeah. So say, we're not being recorded, right? So say, oh, well, think of an indigenous population. or an Aboriginal or a tribe name, and it's clearly that, and somebody decides they want it instead because they think it's cool, but they're not linked to it. You know, a sort of a misappropriation of that name. I mean, that could occur.
Could I jump in there because I'm missing something? In the example you just gave, and when you mentioned it before, a non-community-based application, they're not going to be involved in this point process because they haven't applied as a community-based TLD, right?
Well, that's correct, but they could be in contention, and then the community evaluation criteria would be applied to the community one.
And so then there, what you're thinking then is that there may be the possibility for a community-based applicant not to get that point, and that would be the only reason why you would even consider that.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. So much of this new GTLD discussion is about edge cases that are difficult to understand. So if there's a community-based applicant and a not community-based applicant going for the same name.
So only one of them is going to, if it, the community-based one, because there is contention and because they've identified themselves as such, will get scored.
Right.
Only if
it's
sought to have community evaluation.
That's
right.
That's what Chuck just said.
Right.
And so they will be scored. So the only value, and I'm trying to follow up on what Ray's saying, the only value in even scoring it on uniqueness, if there's the possibility of not getting that uniqueness score. So then the follow-up question, I think, is what criteria will be used to evaluate uniqueness?
Well, it's in the guidebook. So what other uses are there of that name? So, if you're in the Apple community, that's less unique than if you're in the Microsoft community. I pick those because they're not really. I guess I don't know. You can make communities up out of them, but
I'm just trying to help Ray.
Right.
Dovetailing this. You know, this is falling under this concept of nexus, which I won't go into definitions, but nexus is a connection issue. But I'll kind of reiterate maybe Ron Andruff and Steve Metallitz, and you know, 14 out of 16 is already such a high bar, and then to put such a high bar on nexus almost it, to me, makes it a near impossible benchmark. And then I really am struggling to understand where this one point. So if there's only, 16 points, and one of them is for uniqueness, I'm just struggling whether that one point for uniqueness will ever even be used. I guess you could believe I would say on balance, because a lot of this is balance, and I appreciate that. You know, where do you draw that line? So I just might say that on balance, I would side with, you know, maybe Steve or Ron and say that if you want to leave the uniqueness thing in there, okay, but then I would say, all right, lower the points down to 13 instead of 14. You know, so somewhere into the balance is not quite right. It just, I'm not sure. I would go right after uniqueness. I would say I think this point for uniqueness should be repurposed in some other way. That's the way I would go. But if that's too complicated, then I would just go into the other camp and say, all right, well, then just lower the points from 14 to 13. I think you got the balance. So that's my input.
Yeah, so I get that. But and the way you can contribute mightily to that is, provide some scenarios along the lines and say, here's an example of someone I think is a bona fide community-based applicant, and they would not be identified as such in this process under the scoring system.
Yeah, it's difficult to disclose, you know, for other reasons.
No, not, I mean, make some hypotheticals up.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I guess, sorry. Just a different question on my favorite topic, We have the letter out for the confusing, non-detrimentally similar, but non-detrimentally similar situation. I'm just wondering, because, Kurt, I remember one of the conference calls that we were on, you mentioned some implementation, potential implementation problems with that. I just want to get a sense of that, because if it does go through and we do send it, whether, you know, what may be some of the, additional issues that we might have to deal with, for it to be implemented into the applicant guidebook.
Well, so if there's two strings that are confusingly similar and they go to different places, that could give an unexpected result to a user, right? So we're trying to give the users expected results when they type an address into the URL bar. And so if they're confused and type one instead of the other and it goes to a place they don't expect, that's a bad outcome.
If it was clear when they got to that outcome that they went to the wrong place, it's not really a serious problem. I mean, everybody makes typos regardless of whether there's confusing similarity or not. In other words, you know, there may be a detrimental we have a problem right now, right? You got CO and you got COM.
That's a problem.
Well, yeah. Now, maybe if...
I don't think that's a problem.
If... It may depend how the sites are managed, okay? Or, you know, this isn't the case, but maybe Neustar and VeriSign entered into agreement that we're okay with this and we're going to, you know, we'll make sure people are clear. Hasn't happened, but and that's okay. The point is that the recommendation was for detrimental. I think there's the possibility of cases where it really might not be detrimental because of, like David said in the earlier session with the board, where it really may not be detrimental. There may be some confusion that's possible, but it doesn't have to be detrimental. Those may be minimal. I don't know. But all that the GNSO letter, assuming that it's sent forward, is going to suggest, just to add the opportunity for extended evaluation if one of those things occurs. That's really not terribly asking too much, is it?
What I heard you say, Chuck, is depending on how it's managed, or there may be a situation where two entities enter into agreement to run things in a certain way that's not detrimental. So how do we ensure that? What are the criteria you write into the agreement or your specs about how you're managing it and or how that agreement is formed? Because that's sort of all important, because you could enter an agreement with another entity, and it could be to the detriment of users. So how do you
judgment has to be made there. But I think the challenge of defining some criteria to evaluate the detrimental issue is better to take on than the risk of eliminating a string that may be of benefit to users for that reason. So, and I guess the way I'd argue that is, let's not make decisions based on administrative convenience. Let's do a little homework and make sure we try to minimize that.
So why isn't that a policy question?
Why isn't
the conditions under which we delegate confusingly similar names a policy question?
Well, just like all of the recommendations of the GNSO, you know.
I know. And how many of them came back when staff fleshed out the policy?
I understand. you know exactly where I'm coming from on that. I mean, we did not. If we tried to answer all the implementation issues, you know where we'd be 10 years from now. So it's the same as everything else. And we've just identified that there's an issue here. It's an implementation issue, because the GNSO recommendation does say detrimentally confusingly similar. It doesn't just say confusingly similar.
So with regard to variance, which I regard as a subset, it's not exactly a subset, but it's an overlap. this question. The technical community has said that variance should not be delegated until there's a technical solution, and by that mm-hmm. they mean, if I understand it, that the two variants when typed in go to the same place, essentially.
And I don't think we have any argument with that with regard to the variant issue. So we're okay there, I think, on that.
But many variants are confusingly similar.
I understand. But they're not that's okay. But that, like you said, that's a subset. There's the possibility of other cases that is not a variant issue, that's not covered, where there could be an exclusion of a name that may not be to the benefit of users.
To me, boy, I would never say this with well, you guys are technical too, so I don't say I said this outside this room. But to me, one way of thinking about it are variants are IDN names that are confusingly similar, and other names that are confusingly similar but aren't variants are ASCII names, right? Two names that are confusingly similar, you know, could be thought of as Latin-based characters, you know, España with a tilde and without a tilde, or
all we're recommending that it be there be the opportunity in a case where that it can be the decision can be reviewed at one more level, that's all.
But wouldn't the decision have to be reviewed with respect to the how the two TLDs are going to be managed?
Sure. It's going to have to look at some things like that. You've heard the example of .com and .cym.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now that one may be challenged from the CCDLD community. That's another issue.
Well, it's a country. It's a country
yeah.
name, so it's...
If we, or maybe also, you know, maybe even Neustar with .co or something, but, in, you know, cum is it could be thought of as com and so forth. But if that was eliminated and we had entered into an agreement or with the Welsh community that, hey, you know, if somebody's, you know, thinks this is com, you know, you put a little redirect, hey, this is mm-hmm. the Welsh domain, mm-hmm. and please refer here if you're going to that, you know, whatever. I don't know if that's the right way to do it or not, but we could very well. In fact, they've even approached us in that regard, okay? That's not the kind of thing that should be eliminated without that. Now, I agree that there's some judgment that has to be made, and that's why we didn't suggest that you try and figure that out on initial evaluation and instead suggest an extended evaluation.
So I wanted to clarify two things, actually. One, first of all, at least in my perspective, and I know a lot of them, the people who from the Chinese community at least, view variants, the issue of variants and this particular issue very differently. Variants is really that two or more strings are considered the same. Not confusingly similar, they are the same. Okay, so it's a little bit different. So linguistically, they're considered the same. That's why there are variants.
But they're two different names.
I understand. Technically, physically, there are two different strings. But linguistically, they're considered the same. That's why they're called IDN variants, and that's why it's created. But we won't. I don't think we should go further into this.
I understand that point.
But the other point I want to clarify is that the reason why, if I understood it correctly, we gone down, the GNSO recommendations went down the path of confusingly similar, and we specifically talked about detrimentally similar. The issue is that, you know, in a case of, let's say, a trademark situation in the real world, the whole situation will be looked into with regards to confusingly similar. So, you know, who's doing it, what they're doing it for. In the case of new GTLDs, the focus on the string itself, right? And it is, that's why when we talk about confusingly similar, it was only focused on the string itself. That's why we sort of faced this particular issue that we did when the implementation, at least what I think it was, when it's was implemented, then we realized that this issue came out. So right now we're going back to really just clarifying that in the TLD world, we also need to look at the context of which the string is considered similar or not similar, or confusingly similar or not confusingly similar. So that's really what we're talking about. Of course, if the context that who is running it, how it's being run, if that is taken into consideration and it is still considered to be confusingly similar, then it shouldn't be allowed, right?
Kurt, I think I made Kurt.
Can I say one more thing?
Go ahead.
Okay. So I think it's a hard problem. I want to talk about it. I want to resolve it because I think all the strings that can be delegated safely should be delegated. But I think it's just not a matter of saying let's do extended evaluation. It's saying how we do extended evaluation.
Yeah, and that's true of all the areas of extended evaluation, correct? And I think there are four, I think, right now. Agreed.
Okay. Greg Rattray is here and only has about 20 minutes or so. So, Kurt, if you don't mind, we'll let you off the hot seat. Greg, thanks for joining us. Kurt and Greg, thanks for joining us.
Should I just jump on in? You guys need a bio break? Or, no, I shouldn't suggest that. It's 20 minutes.
Yeah, I had a question, and Kurt, I'm sorry. I don't know if you covered this already, and if you have, just tell me to be quiet, and I'll get the answer from someone. The new requirements that are put into the DAG, it's kind of italicized in the contract, but relate to new things that we all need to do with respect to who is, as far as a searchable database and searching on all those characters and things. I know that's kind of a placeholder, and I'm not sure if that came from the security. I think it came as part of the whole mitigating malicious conduct. That kind of feature functionality is not in most topple domains. It's in .name, I think, and maybe a couple others. To actually build that is some considerable cost. So I don't know if just if you can give us some background as to why that's in there and some thoughts behind that. And I'll get the exact provision, but it's in the contract.
No, I know what you're talking about. The suggestion came from, in the same discussion that Thick Who Is, generated a requirement for Thick Who Is, and went to the idea that, information can be gained from registrar databases or registry databases if they're thick, and searchability would help that. I think this might be one area for the new drafting. The new drafting group to take up, because it's in there as a placeholder because we didn't know how to write sensible criteria for that, or how much cost it would add to a registry, or how much value is obtained from it. We've been given a value side to it, but that's the only side. That's the only information.
Okay, so it's really just at this point just a total suggestion. It may not end up in the final, but it's just kind of thrown out there to see the reaction.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
Thanks. Now, Greg.
Okay, thank you. What I plan to do is just make some fairly broad, remarks, or just from my perspective, whether the high-profile, important security, stability, and resiliency things going on within staff, really just to orient, the stakeholder group. Certainly can talk about any of the subjects at more length. Really kind of two broad areas, the work that's been done on malicious conduct in new GTLDs, and then talk some about the strategic initiatives and what I think the state of play is with those initiatives that were published prior to Nairobi. Certainly got a lot of feedback on the DNS cert initiative, both at Nairobi and subsequently, and where I think, from a staff perspective, we're at with working with the community. So on malicious conduct, just in order to hit this at the right level of depth, how many people were at the new GTLD session yesterday afternoon where I briefed this? So less than half. So I'll probably do a little bit deeper, given that.
Excuse me. I want to be sure we have time for questions.
Okay,
I know, so
I'll stay pretty high, and if I got to be out of here in 20, then, keep that in mind. Malicious conduct is one of four overarching issues. A series of consultations were done, a lot of particularly talk in the Sydney meeting this time last year. We published in October of last year a set of mitigating measures, right? There were nine of those. Six of those, things like Thick Who Is, vetting registry operators, the requirement for DNSSEC are all embedded in the draft applicant guidebook. They were back to the DAG 3. One of which is the one that Craig really led, which is the expedited registry security request process. You know, that's in place. Again, if we need any more detail on that, we can certainly talk about it. The two really active issues have been the creation of a centralized zone file access approach, and there was an advisory group put together. They've made a recommendation. By all accounts, one of the more effective, focused advisory groups on a technical subject made a strong recommendation about, I think I'm supposed to avoid the clearinghouse term, yes. about a mechanism by which registries can, provide a single process for which users of zone file data can access that data. And there's a strategy paper on that out for public comment right now. And based on that, I think the next step is for the staff to make recommendations to the board about moving forward with the implementation of that recommendation. And then we have a high security TLD advisory group. The work there, not as mature, but if you look at the publicly posted work, there is a strong set of draft control structures for the types of technical measures that would be implemented, technical and procedural measures that would be implemented in a voluntary certification program. The approach to who would run the certification program, how it would be paid for, haven't grappled with those more difficult problems at this point. Again, there's an advisory group active in that realm. We're hoping to get some recommendations from them by the summer. So that's really where we're at with malicious conduct. Working with Kurt, I think the staff's perspective is that work is mature in the sense that we want to take off of the overarching issues that we've dealt with malicious conduct, constituted a number of mitigation measures and still working on the high security zone measures, which are not directly linked to new GTLDs. That's probably a point worth mentioning and maybe discussing. But that we don't plan additional efforts beyond finishing up the high security TLD advisory group work in that area and consider the malicious conduct issue, largely closed. So that's one broad area. The other broad area, the strategic initiatives. I will remind those who haven't had a chance to actually read the overall strategic initiatives paper that there were two initiatives tabled, the first one being on risk assessment, contingency planning, and exercising, the notion that systemically we need to understand what are the key risks in a security and resiliency perspective, and then based on that, hopefully constitute some efforts community-wide on contingency planning and maybe in the longer term exercising to meet with key contingencies. My strong sense is that that notion is widely accepted, at least mostly at the risk assessment level. We did not receive a lot of pointed comment on whether we should proceed forward with any specific approach to community-wide risk assessment, but that is the horse in front of the cart, and we should do risk assessment. The much more vigorous commentary has been on the DNS cert. As a point of clarification, hopefully this is fairly clear at this point, but I still hear the notion that ICANN had suggested that the ICANN staff in FY11 constitute a $4 million, effort to stand up a DNS cert. If you read the language in the that starts the strategic initiative, at the end of the first paragraph says, these resources are not planned in the ICANN operating plan for FY11, and the organizational and resourcing approach to these initiatives is TBD. That the point of the initiatives is really to, begin a community dialogue about the necessity of these capabilities, including a cert. I had made the bold step, and I'll take responsibility, of putting together a back of the envelope calculation on resources based on the notion that it really needed to be a global standing 24/7 operation. Again, that requirement is one that needs to be discussed and vetted by the community, but that's where the $4 million number came up with, just that, you know, we wanted to put out there that this was not a volunteer effort, you know, or a working group sort of thing. All that said, I would say there's probably four main themes to the comment we've received from the community. One, that the notion of discussing a CERT is something that's viable. Two, that ICANN should not run the CERT, that this should not be staffed by ICANN, and that this should be run through a community, you know, process for understanding what the requirements for such a body would be. That three, that there was not sufficient analysis of extending mechanisms, both within the community, the DNS or the ICANN community, as well as with the global, you know, incident response community, particularly CERTs, and that we needed to spend more time understanding what CERTs currently do. Related to that, that efforts might be more fruitfully focused on training and improving CERT capabilities instead of standing up a separate DNS CERT. And lastly, that there are entities within the registrar community and from less resourced regions of the globe where these capabilities, security capabilities, are relatively weak, and there may be some value to a, you know, a centralized capability that could assist them in certain situations. So that's what is in our synopsis of comments on a DNS CERT. The way forward would be to, you know, work with the community both on risk assessment, not initiate any further. We can talk about the operational requirements workshop we did in April, but I want to kind of keep my comments briefer. But beyond that work that we've done to develop the idea, that, you know, we really would like to get behind community-based initiatives to explore the notion of a DNS CERT further, which, you know, we understand both within the ICANN structure, the GNSO, CCNSO, and potentially the ALAC and ESSAC may work to move toward forming a working group on this subject. Also, you know, we did have a blog posting last week by Paul Vixie, who's called for a Birds of the Feather session this evening, which happens at 1800, right across the hall from here in rooms 313 and 315. But that Paul will lead that session. ICANN staff will only attend, you know, in terms of the work that they've done and where ICANN may fit into, you know, such a endeavor. Let's see. What else? One of the things that I guess is probably also worth making you guys aware of is we are spending a considerable amount of effort within the staff working with the CERT community to teach them about DNS security issues. We spent time last week at the global conference called FIRST, the Forum on Incident Response and Security Teams, did a day-long training session on DNS security issues, which involved people from the CC community, .AT, who's also, they're certain their registry are in the same organization, actually. They're providing some of their best practices. People from the response community kind of teaching the CERT community what the issues are with the DNS. So I think we've already taken on board the notion that we've got to build capacity independent from a DNS CERT. And we'll probably work with them to do a survey on what national CERTs need in terms of understanding and support related to the domain name system response issues. I think I'll stop it there, just to leave some time for questions from the group.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. My question is about my favorite topic, which is zone file access. You mentioned that ICANN staff is going to put together a proposal before the board regarding this implementation plan. So I would like to ask, what stage is the staff now in with this implementation plan? One question that I'm interested personally in is whether you have made any choice whether ICANN will run that centralized provider, or you will outsource it to someone else?
So the answer is the phase we're in is dormant, and we haven't made any choices. Really, just having put that thing out for public comment, What we'd prefer as staff is a robust, you know, set of comment in from the community about which of those, you know, approaches seems to make the most sense. And we're, you know, given everything else going on right now, we're actually probably just awaiting to see what the community says about the strategy proposal that was put together before we actually move to enough, you know, implementation look to give the board some sort of concrete recommendation. So that's where we're at.
Thank you.
Kathy, go ahead.
I know you can't see me. Hi, Greg.
Hey.
And thank you so much. I know you've been meeting with people, you know, all over the world throughout the ICANN community and the internet community, which is great. I was wondering, as we talk about the themes of emerging from the DNS cert so far, and thanks for the overview, is there any convergence on what the DNS security term means? What DNS security seems to overlap a lot with internet security, and I've heard everyone I talk to seems to have their own definition, including that DNS security involves paying for a domain name with a fraudulent credit card. You know, very broad and very narrow definitions. Is there any convergence emerging from the comments on what kind of scope we're looking at?
Kathy, I don't think most people did not comment on scope, right? So yeah, there's certainly no convergence on the scope issue, but the scope issue really hasn't been a lot of vetting on what scope is. As a practical matter, the answer is we didn't get enough comment to judge whether there's convergence or not. I think there are some probably concerns about you could overscope, you know, DNS security pretty easily. You could get into, you know, the question is at what level of an organ, you know, what is ICANN's responsibility, what are registry registrars' responsibility? The DNS is pervasive in the internet, so you could give it, you could say this had a very wide set of activities and responsibilities, could be lumped up under DNS security, or you could start to be pretty narrow and say, you know, from an ICANN perspective, it's really the root and the top level domain, you know, operations and issues of security and resiliency around those. Obviously, if one was to stand up a cert, you'd have to work through, you know, where those responsibilities lie. My strong sense is, and this comes from the creation of the ICANN plan on enhancing internet, and it's not DNS, internet security, stability, and resiliency, is you want to focus on core things. You know, there is an ability to say we're responsible here, and we practically must deliver. And then you want to contribute to dialogues and capabilities at broader levels. I think the cert would probably usefully take that same sort of scoping approach.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. I'm sure you're aware that the CCNSO has requested the GNSO to consider forming a joint community-wide working group, and with the first step being forming a drafting team to develop a possible charter that could be considered by the two organizations for working together in moving this forward, in whatever that means. Is it fair to assume that that you possibly, others, and of course even a Paul Vixie would be welcome to participate in that group? I just want to make clear that assuming that the GNSO and the CCNSO move forward with this, and I think all indications that they will, is that it's understood that this is not intended to be restricted to the CCNSO and the GNSO. It's community-wide and really not even restricted to the ICANN community.
So, Chuck, I think my opinion is it would be essential to that group's success that the value of a cert is going to be the ability to bridge between the ICANN community and the normal constituencies to the cybersecurity community, the people that, you know, want to work with the DNS community or the ICANN community to more effectively deal with problems. So you'll want to pull in, you know, expertise from the people that you'll need to work with on this topic, and I assume that there'll be, you know, willing volunteers to do that. And again, we have got a lot of bridge organizations. You know, staff certainly wants to continue to engage, and we would not have launched the initiative if we didn't think there was some value to the discussion. So, yes.
And any help you can provide to, you know, connect us with bridge organizations or alert them to the fact that this is going on. One of the things that we talked about in the GNSO joint meeting on yesterday with the CCNSO was that there's a lot of material out there that will help, that you guys have created and others that will really help in drafting the charter. And that's all that would happen next is a drafting group to prepare a charter. Fortunately, in this case, there's lots of good work that's gone on that can be used to facilitate that process.
Okay. Anyone else? Go ahead.
Greg, yesterday at that session, I think it was that one, Steve Metalitz had raised a comment, and I know you talked about it. Is this something we should be worried about? Steve Metalitz's comment was that the high security zone shouldn't be voluntary. It should be mandatory, or at least, at the very least, give them extra points or something on their evaluation.
Right.
Is this something that we need to comment? Is this something that's being taken seriously, or – I don't mean that sounds bad.
I got it, Jeff.
You know what I'm saying? Is this something we should even discuss and actually submit a comment refuting his claims, or should we just...
It would be useful, right? I mean, we have had law enforcement, you know, at various sessions say that the measures being considered in the high security zone program should not be voluntary but should be mandatory across all zones. You know, we've had others, you know, basically sympathetic to that notion. Again, we had comment yesterday, right? So, you know, from my perspective, the notion that that's not the right way, that, you know, that there will need to be new GTLDs that don't have the same high, you know, can effectively operate and serve their constituencies without the same high bar that a high security zone would put on would be a useful thing. I will say right now there's been, you know, I would say since last August when we really started to grapple with this, there was no notion that this high security program would be mandatory for everybody. We've got eight other measures in place that are supposed to set the bar for everybody. You know, when we've made those mandatory, or again in the ERSR program, that's available. But that, you know, that high security was about creating a separate voluntary place for new registries and maybe existing registries to go as a trust factor if that's where they decided, you know, they needed to serve their constituency.
And Greg, just to let you know, because you weren't around at the time, because it's been a long time ago, but in the new GTLD process, we actually spent some time talking about the issue of the level of security and other issues as well, even financial requirements and business requirements. And so the recommendations, the way they were all made, were made at a somewhat minimal level that is necessary to ensure basic security, interoperability, stability, with the full recognition that not all TLDs need the same level of those things, whether it be financial commitment, whether it be security, whether it be these other things. So what you just said, I would consider to be consistent with the GNSO recommendations. To go the other way would be inconsistent with the recommendations.
Right. And even putting that in at this point would be useful because, I mean, you know, my perspective with the 3 years that I have had is the demands of certain constituencies of ICANN for higher levels of secure, you know, attention to security issues, you know, there's been a change dynamic, you know, especially I would say over the last 18 months. So reinforcing the basic intent of the GNSO in that regard would probably be would be useful from my perspective.
Yeah, I want to go back to something Kathy said actually, and I think it's a good. It just got me thinking a little bit. I think there are a lot of people in this community that, when they think of security, they think of a lot broader issues than what we mean by security or what DNS security. So you have companies or companies like Newjohn, for example, will put out a report about the sale of illegal pharmaceuticals. and they will argue that that affects the security of the internet. It's a little bit different than the security issues we're talking about with dealing with DNSSEC and other measures to make sure that when someone wants to get to a certain place, they're getting to that place. It doesn't really have to do with content. And I think that needs to be explained. I think law enforcement is pushing for mandatory security, but I'm not sure they necessarily understand, some of them understand what they're pushing for. In other words, some of them are equating security with doing these extra things to stop the illegal conduct as opposed to doing extra things to make sure that traffic goes where it's supposed to go.
Right. I think for the community, this is an issue that, you know, doesn't have one answer and will be in the dialogue for a long time. I just try to give you my perspective. Certainly the proposition that technically the DNS needs to be work, you know, secure, stable, and resilient from disruption so that the service is there is core, right? And there's little argument about that. There's a strong proposition that security also ought to include, or at least attention ought to be given to, the misuse of the DNS to facilitate, and then the question is, how long a list? Everything from spam up to, clearly criminal, propagation of malware, which is also disruptive, right? So, my experience says that, in our plan currently says, we will work with law enforcement, those combating phishing, to understand and pass information and facilitate, efforts to reduce the amount of malicious or abusive use of the DNS, but that's not necessarily a core responsibility.